Welcome to episode 52. I'm Stuart McCullough, I'm the CEO of VHAA. And starting with this week's industrial roundup, and in particular with community health and allied health professionals, there are no further meetings scheduled for allied health professionals bargaining. We're at a critical juncture, and the time has come for us to seek the assistance of the Fair Work Commission. We'll be updating our community health members regularly with respect to this through the VHAA community app, so those members should keep their eyes peeled under the community health stream. In terms of the medical scientists bargaining, on the Thursday, the 1st of March, we're scheduled to meet with representatives from the MSAV to continue bargaining for a replacement agreement covering dietitians and psychologists and pharmacists. With respect to our health service members, we are conducting our regional forums commencing this week. We'll be in the Grampians region and in particular at Skipton on Friday the 2nd of March, the Loddon Mallee region at Maryborough District Health on the 5th of March, the Hume region at Benalla Health on the 6th of March, and the Gippsland region at La Trobe Hospital on the 8th of March. And finally, for the Barwon region, we will be in Geelong on Friday the 9th of March, and we look forward to catching up with our rural and regional members. With respect to the doctors bargaining, VHAA has issued bulletins with respect to the provision of eligible employee lists and a request for confirmation that copies of the agreement, the ballot dates and other relevant material have been distributed by Friday the 2nd of March. The ballots are scheduled for 9 a.m. Thursday 15 March to midnight Friday the 23rd of March. We're preparing implementation materials and we welcome volunteers to host EBA forums in coming weeks. With respect to the general dentists and specialist dentists bargaining, the parties are yet to arrange future meetings, but discussions are ongoing between ourselves, Professionals Australia and DHHS. There is a critical issue with respect to funding, having regard for the scale of the claim being made on behalf of dentists. And with respect to nurses, on the 28th of February, VHAA hosted the industry OH&S working group with the ANMF. These and other activities are summarised, as always, on the VHAA community app. And that's it for this week's Industrial Roundup. Welcome to the weekly update, where we go in-depth with a particular subject. And joining me for this week's discussion is the Manager of Workplace Relations and semi-professional Married at First Sight blogger, Tim Nagle. Welcome, Tim.
Thanks, Stuart. Good to be here.
Tim, would you be good enough to reveal the clue which will suggest this week's subject for discussion? So for the benefit of those people who are listening to this podcast rather than watching, could you describe the objects?
So we have a DVD, All the King's Men.
All the King's Men, starring Broderick Crawford, winner of Best Picture in 1949.
And we also have a CD entitled On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
So based on those two objects, what would you say that the subject matter for this week's discussion is?
Well, that's easy, Stuart. Clearly it's jury duty.
Tim, you couldn't be more wrong. And we've had a lot of criticism from members as to your inability to guess the subject matter, so we're going to step this one through. So starting with All the King's Men, it stars Broderick Crawford playing the role of Willie Long. It's based on a book which in turn was based on a real-life character, that is, a former Louisiana governor, Huey Long. And just to make this as simple as possible, I've prepared some post-it notes. Long. In terms of the second item, that's a soundtrack for the film On Her Majesty's Secret Service, the only James Bond film to star George Lazenby in the title role. So our second element of the clue, Her Majesty's Secret Service. You can probably tell where this is going, but just to make it as clear and as simple as possible, the third element of this particular clue is... this is a shirt sleeve. It belongs to a shirt that my father, I believe, has given to me, but possibly has just loaned me. So we have long, service, and...
sleeve.
Sleeve. So today's subject is long, service, sleeve.
Long, service, sleeve?
Jim, I've got a sneaking suspicion that the audience is a long way ahead of you on this one. We're talking about long service leave.
Right.
And in particular, we're talking about long service leave and casuals. We're talking about those with mixed service, those that is people with casual and permanent, either full-time or part-time service. We're talking about the Long Service Leave Act, as well as the Nurses and Midwives Agreement. Perhaps we should start with the Nurses and Midwives Agreement. What are the changes that arise as a result of that agreement?
So the changes relate to the long service leave entitlements for registered nurses and midwives and not enrolled nurses.
So just to be clear, that the new agreement does not change the entitlement for casual ENs. Casual ENs have always had an entitlement under the enterprise agreements and indeed the pre-modern award before that.
Yes, that's right.
All right. So for the sake of caution, this would be the bit where no change for casual ENs flashes, I think, just beneath our chins or something.
That's right. Exactly the same.
So there's no change at all for ENs, and the change is limited then to casual registered nurses, there's a change for casual registered nurses and midwives.
That's right.
And so what's triggered this change for those casual registered nurses and midwives? What are the events that have led up to that?
So there's two things that have occurred that's triggered the changes that we're about to talk about. The first one is the introduction of the Fair Work Act. And the second one is the inclusion of Clause 70.5B in the Nurses and Midwives Agreement.
So just for people who aren't familiar with the how things were, casual RNs and casual midwives did not have any entitlement to long service leave under the agreement, and it states that they're excluded from that agreement. But just in terms of the relevance of those changes that you referred to, particularly the changes coming into effect with the Fair Work Act, could you describe those changes?
So the Fair Work Act was introduced in 2010, and what the Fair Work Act said is that those employees without any entitlement under the pre-modern award or agreement were entitled to the benefit of the State-Based Long Service Leave Act at the time a successor agreement came into force. So for the Nurses and Midwives Agreement, that occurred on the 6th of July 2012.
So that reference to a successor agreement is the first agreement after the introduction of the Fair Work Act. That's what that's referring to.
That's right.
And in effect, what that provision is stating that those without a pre-modern award entitlement default to the state legislation. So this only applies then to those employees who did not have an entitlement to long service leave.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. So when this occurred, and it really, we've been wrestling with this probably over the last couple of years,
yeah. The
initial discussion focused on whether a zero entitlement under the agreement actually constituted an entitlement or not. Because even if a zero entitlement was zero, if it was an entitlement, then they were precluded from the State Long Service Leave Act.
My recollection was that there was discussion at the time of the Fair Work Act coming into effect that these long service leave provisions were transitory or transitional, and the idea was to really preserve rather than affect the status quo.
Yeah.
But because of some unusual conditions that we have within our sector, that's not turned out to be the case.
So those discussions progressed and culminated in us seeking legal advice that stated that, in fact, they were entitled to the benefit of the State-Based Long Service Leave Act.
And in terms of the changes to the Fair Work Act, that's had an indirect impact to establish an entitlement for casual registered nurses and casual midwives in accordance with the terms of the Long Service Leave Act, which I understand are different to the terms under the Nurses and Midwives Agreement.
Yeah, they are, that's right. So the entitlement under the Victorian Long Service Leave Act is half of that contained under the Enterprise Agreement.
Half,
that's right. So the entitlement is 13 weeks of paid leave after 13 years, which can, like the agreement, can be portionally taken after 10 years, whilst our agreements are 26 weeks of paid leave after the 15 years.
And in terms of other entitlements under the Long Service Leave Act, particularly upon termination?
Yeah, so that's a significant difference between the State-Based Long Service Leave Act and our agreements, in that if you resign from your employment or are terminated, then you get a pro-rata payment after 7 years.
So a point of distinction between the State Long Service Leave Act and our industry enterprise agreement. Our industry enterprise agreement provides for portability of service. What about the State Long Service Leave Act?
Yeah, so because of that provision that says it has to be paid out, there is no portability under the State Act. It just assumes that you're with one employer.
So on that basis, there is no option to say to someone to not pay out after 7 years of casual service, subject to the eligibility provisions of the Long Service Leave Act.
Yeah, that's right.
What happens to a person who has mixed service and at the time that they're seeking long service leave is casual? That is somebody who was permanent for a period of time and then moved to casual. What's the approach under those circumstances?
Yeah, so in those circumstances, they've got continuity of employment under the State-Based Act. So that previous period of permanent employment would be counted or would count towards their continual service, but under the State Act. So if you had, for instance, 4 years of permanent and then went casual for 4 years, resigned your employment, then you would be paid a total of 8 years under the State-Based Long Service Leave
Act. So the interesting thing there, well, given that we're talking about mixed service, but the crucial thing seems to be that at the point in time that they're accessing the entitlement, if they're accessing the entitlement as a casual, then the rules for a casual apply under the State Long Service Leave Act. Is that correct?
That's right, yes.
Just to reiterate, under those circumstances, mixed service, they're a casual and they finish after 8 years service, then it's paid at what accrual rate?
So the rates, the State-Based Long Service Leave Act includes a formula to use for casual employees. So it is the average over the last 12 months or 5 years, whichever one's greater.
Okay. So if that's the case, then that sounds as though it would be something of a disincentive for people to go from permanent to casual without addressing their long service leave first if they possibly could.
I think it's, and I think one of the upshots from these changes are there's going to be a real consideration for employees when it hasn't necessarily been that way previously.
I think also there's a point of distinction when we get to the agreement and those people who are accessing as a permanent, even though they have mixed service. So a really interesting point of distinction on that point. I think members will be keen to know how far back this entitlement potentially goes to.
Yeah, so there is no limitation under the Victorian Long Service Leave Act. The recognition of casual service under the State-Based Act occurred in 2005, but it doesn't actually provide a limit to how far you can go back.
And my recollection is that there are specific provisions with regards to what breaks and doesn't break service for a casual employee under the State Long Service Leave Act.
There is. So it's 13 weeks between shifts, essentially. So if you're a casual with an employer, you work one shift and then work another one 13 weeks, beyond 13 weeks after that first shift, then you'll essentially break your service.
And I think the other burning issue for a lot of people who need to administer these issues is what are the record-keeping obligations on employers?
So Section 80 of the State-Based Long Service Leave Act requires the employer to keep long service records for at least 7 years after the employee either dies or leaves the service. So there are specific record-keeping obligations under the State-Based Act.
It's a different emphasis too compared to the agreement.
That's right.
So just to summarise, what are the implications of the changes in the Fair Work Act?
Yeah, so the first point is that casual registered nurses have access to the long service provisions contained within the Victorian Long Service Leave Act. It's the first major thing. The second one is that casual registered nurses can access previous permanent employment with the same employer, but that occurs at the reduced rate. So this is the example we used before where they had 4 years of permanent employment, then went casual,
yep,
and then left the organisation. They can do that, but at the reduced rate, so that's right under the State-Based Long Service Leave Act. The next key point is that continuous employment is determined by the Victorian Long Service Leave Act. So that's the point about what breaks service and what counts.
So the rules are contained within the Long Service Leave Act itself.
Exactly. And finally, any continuous service beyond 7 years under the Victorian Long Service Leave Act is paid out upon termination.
All right, so that covers off those people who did not have an entitlement under the Enterprise Agreement, that they default to the State Long Service Leave Act. Take us now to the Nurses and Midwives Agreement, and in particular to Clause 70.5.
So the first key thing about 70.5B is that broadly Clause 70, is it only applies to permanent employees being full-time and part-timers. casual employees being registered nurses and midwives are still excluded from the operation of the clause.
So what does that mean in practical terms?
So what that means is that you need to be permanent, being full-time or part-time, to access the entitlement under the clause.
Now, is this one of those point-of-time propositions again? That is, you need to be permanent at the time that you are seeking to access the entitlement.
That's right. So, and this is a critical point about the changes, is that what you are at the time you access an entitlement is really, really important. So if you were casual at that point in time, you'd be accessing the state-based Long Service Leave Act. If you're a permanent employee, being full-time or part-time, you're accessing Clause 70 of the agreement.
So I think that point-in-time approach is really a significant shift. Yes. for a lot of members. So Clause 70.5B applies only to those who are full-time or part-time at the point at which they access their Long Service Leave entitlement?
Correct.
So what's the reference to mixed service and how does that work?
So how that works is that often people will change their mode of employment through their employment life.
So from casual to full-time, from to part-time to casual.
That's right. So in a situation where someone goes from permanent to casual to permanent, they access their long service leave entitlement under Clause 70, that whole period counts. What the real... what the effect of 70.5B, though, is that those times count at different rates. So the permanent period of time will count at the 26 weeks for 15 years, which is the normal agreement entitlement. But the periods of casual service, while they'll contribute to continuous service, accrue at a lower rate. So they're the state-based act accrual rate, which is 13 weeks in 15 years.
So it really fills the gap in terms of describing how it works where a person does have that mixed history. But it's all subject to the various continuity rules.
That's right, yes. So they still apply during that period of time.
So could you give an example of how that might work?
So, for example, if you have 7.5 years of permanent employment, and 7.5 years of casual employment, and we assume that the casual employment occurred first, how you would calculate that is that you would receive 7.5 times the Long Service Leave Act accrual rate, which is 0.8667 weeks per year. So that would equal 6.5 weeks, for instance. And then for the other 7.5 years, you would accrue at the agreement rate, which is 1.733 weeks per year, which would be 13 weeks. So overall, you would have 19.5 weeks.
So just to recap that, 7.5 years as a casual and 7.5 years then as a permanent. The first 7.5 years as a casual calculated at really at half the rate of the permanent
rate. That's
right,
yes.
And then the second part is calculated in accordance with the permanent rate, and that's what gets you to that sum total of 21 weeks.
So in essence, if you've undertaken mixed service, you're going to have somewhere between the state-based long service leave entitlement of 13 weeks and the agreement rate of 26 weeks, depending on how much casual work you've done.
So the higher the proportion of permanent work, then the higher the rate of accrual for that period and the higher the entitlement.
That's right.
The greater the proportion of casual work, bearing in mind that you must be permanent at the time you seek the entitlement, then that will have the opposite effect.
That's right.
And in terms of continuous service, what approach is taken under the agreement?
So continuous service under the agreement, for that permanent period of time, we still have the same rules that we have always had. For the casual period, it refers back to the rules under the state-based long service leave.
And Section 62A in particular is of relevance to casuals under the State Long Service Leave Act.
And that talks about that 13-week break between engagements.
So the interesting thing about that is that at a point in time, they would have been under the State Long Service Leave Act. So I guess the logical question is, does service that fell under the State Long Service Leave Act count for the purposes of an entitlement now under the agreement where they've made that transition to permanent employment?
It does. But the key thing is that you don't receive double payments. So you may have left an employer after, say, 8 years, be paid out your long service leave entitlement under the State Act, then worked for another employer, you met the requirements of the allowable period of absence. So you would maintain continuity of employment, but you couldn't be double paid for that first period of time.
We talked before about the under the State Long Service Leave Act, that somebody who had gone from permanent to casual and sought to access their entitlement as a casual, that in effect that there was a disincentive to that kind of approach, but almost the opposite observation could be made for those people who transfer to permanent employment.
Yes, that's right. So the whole point is to try and encourage permanent employment.
So we know that members always want to know how long for. We know that they want to know what their record-keeping obligations are, but they always want to know how is it to be funded.
Yeah, so currently there's a process in the department for reconciling the long service leave payments of health services. So this will be paid the same way. So whilst the accruals will show up in, or the liability will show up in the health services books, the payment actually will occur through the department.
Through the department?
Yes.
And I guess in terms of that, that leads on to the question as to payroll implications. These changes, because they've been affected by a legislative change, don't take into account administrative ease, I think it's fair to say. Mm. What are the payroll implications?
So, I mean, I think there's some significant implications for payroll, and really that's going to translate into a lot of additional manual calculations and reconciliations. So we're scheduling a reference group with our payroll reference group, but also representative of HR, to try and work through some of those practical implications.
So what other activities does VHA have planned to discuss these changes for long service leave further?
So it is a big change, so we're doing a lot in to try and support the implementation of the new provisions. So firstly, we've released an implementation guide. I think that was released last week, and that's a collaborative document that we've created with both the department and also the ANMF as well.
So that's an agreed interpretation. It's been released as a bulletin. People can find it on the MyIR website page, and they can also find it on the community app. And the benefit of accessing through the app, of course, is that you can add your questions there and we can address those in future podcasts.
And it's really important that people do that, because there will be scenarios that pop up. The implementation guide contains a frequently asked questions section, but there will always be additional questions to add to that.
And any question that a member has, they won't be the only member to have that question.
That's right. The second thing we're doing is releasing a further bulletin dealing with the interactions between the various agreements and the State-Based Long Service Leave Act. So while we address it through the implementation guide and this podcast about the interaction between the nurses' agreement and the State-Based Long Service Leave, each agreement will have an interaction. So we'll release that bulletin to give people more information about that. We'll also add long service leave to the March regional rural member forums that we're undertaking to give people to run through the situation and the implications with members, and also give them a chance to ask questions.
So those upcoming rural and regional forums commencing on the 2nd of March will be a great opportunity for members to ask their questions about these changes.
That's right. We're also adding it to the metropolitan and regional rural monthly meeting agendas as well. So they occur in the first and the second week of the month to try and stimulate some additional conversations and answer any questions that people may have there. And finally, as you said, we're using the VHIA community app to elicit questions from the field so that we can gather them for the next frequently asked questions.
So just to reiterate, the implementation guide that's been issued is a document that is an agreed document between ourselves, ANMF and DHHS.
Yes, that's right.
And the key points with regards to that document once again?
So the key points really are that the situation for registered nurses and midwives has changed under both the agreement and the Long Service Leave Act. It's not necessarily a result of the new agreement, but rather a result of legislative changes. That periods of casual employment for registered nurses and midwives may now count towards a calculation of continuous service, and the mode of employment at the time of taking the leave or taking the entitlement is really important to determine what the rules are.
Tim, I suspect we're going to be talking about this again, and we're certainly going to be talking about it with our HR people and at the Rural and Regional Forums. But thank you for taking us through that summary of the implementation guide. I'm mindful that we've got a soundtrack for On Her Majesty's Secret Service, but I do feel that Mission Impossible might have been a better choice. But thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Stuart.